Church of the Brethren webcast series. I am Antonello, executive producer of these webcasts, and your host for this program. Welcome, everyone, to the fourth in our series of podcasts about the Chronicler. With me today is Bob Neff. Bob is a former professor of Old Testament studies at Bethany Theological Seminary, also served as the general secretary of the Church of the Brethren and as president of Juniata College. Bob is presently on the staff of the Village at Morrison's Cove and remains active in teaching and writing. Bob earned his Bachelor of Divinity at Yale Divinity School and then his MA and PhD at Yale University. And Bob still enjoys new and exciting ventures in teaching and learning. So Bob, welcome.
Good to be with you again, Anton. Thank you for the welcome. I look forward to our time together. And last time we were together, you gave me some new insight in terms of the larger background to 1 Chronicles 4, 9 through 11. And now today we're going to do a much larger sweep. We're going to move from 1 Chronicles 11 through the rest of that book, up through chapter 29.
That's a difference from just three verses.
It's a difference from three verses, but it gives us a view of how this writer works. And he is remolding the tradition. In the case of the prayer of Jabez, it was actually putting three verses in which we can't find anywhere else in Scripture. In today's lesson, we're looking at material that is already formed, that can be found in 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 Kings 1 and 2. And in this material, he's taking certain things and removing certain things. For example, there is no act of adultery in this section. There's no story of David and Bathsheba. There's no story about the revolt of Absalom and the inner turmoil in David's family. There is no statement about the loss of the ark to the Philistines. And in some ways, we're thinking that this is an ideal version of David. I don't take that view. I take the view that it's the other David. Let me give you an illustration from my own family. I talked about going to the Pottstown Church in the last session, and we came to Pottstown from Huntington. My father taught on the faculty at Juniata, and we were there from 46 to 49. As a child, I recall that that's the time our family broke up. My father ran off with another woman, and the pain of that event still accompanies me. However, when I went back to Juniata in 1986, I discovered a different view of my father. I talked to former students of his, and I'm going to give a few illustrations because that view of my father is totally different than the view that I hold of what I considered an irresponsible parent. One of the things that I did when I went back to Huntington was join the Rotary Club, and it wasn't long until a businessman in town came up to me and said, "I want you to know, Bob, that your father saved my academic career. I was a World War II veteran, and one of the requirements they had at Juniata was an ethics course, and you had to pass the ethics course to graduate from Juniata." And so this individual invited my father up for lemonade, and my dad went up, sat with him on his front step. This was when they had Quonset huts for the returned soldiers, and so they drank lemonade together, and he said, "Dr. Neff, I'm not going to get through your class. I just can't understand this ethical dimension that you're asking us for. You know, your father said to me, you do all the work, and I will be with you to get you through this course so you graduate." And I did. And I'm eternally grateful to your father. One of the alumni that I visited was a former coach at Juniata, and I will mention his name, Bill Smaltz. Bill Smaltz was one of the winningest football coaches Juniata ever had, which is a far different story than they have now. When I went down there and said, "You know, Bob, I really like your dad. He used to come over to our house and make cookies with football players and other athletes. And so we have very fond memories of your father." And then I talked to students who had had my father in class and said, "Your father was an incredible teacher. One of the most exciting classes I ever had was a class your father taught on New Testament. The other person who gave me a different view, who is now deceased, was Reverend Bomberger, who sent me notes of what my father used to talk about whenever he went out to places like Camp Harmony. And the reason I tell you all this is that I had to construct a different vision of my father. Never once did his past come up with reference to why we left Huntington. Never once in all those conversations. In that sense, it mirrors the chronicler and the way he deals with David. The chronicler wants to emphasize what contributes to the long life of Israel 500 years later. I went back to Huntington 40 years later, and I'm reminded of an artist who, in a recent lecture that I attended, held up a squash, an acorn squash. And she said, you know, you can look at this squash and see it from the stem side, and she held it with the stem side towards us. Or you can turn around and look at it from the bottom, or you can hold it straight up. And while she was talking, I thought, you know, you can also think of that squash cut in half with butter and brown sugar. All of those are true images. And as I said earlier, we're tempted to think of the chronicler as idealization of David. Reflecting on my father and my relationship with him, and then my later relationship at Juniata, I really understand that there are different views. And the chronicler chose to emphasize a different side of David. And it had to be real. It had to be true. And let me say why. When you look at the material, the chronicler wants to show that David participates with people. And so I'm going to read a text and then show you, this is chapter 13 and verses 1 through 4. David consulted with the commanders of the thousands and of the hundreds, with every leader. David said to the whole assembly of Israel, "If it seems good to you, and if it is the will of the Lord our God, let us send abroad to our kindred who remain in all the land of Israel, including the priests and Levites in the city that have pasture lands, that they may come together to us. Then let us bring again the ark of our God to us, for we did not turn to it in the days of Saul." The whole assembly agreed to do so, for the thing pleased all the people. The same text appears in 2 Samuel 6. There it simply says, David commanded all the people, and they followed him. Notice the chronicler has a very consultative style. He enlists the people in an action that the king will undertake. It's rather remarkable. We don't expect royalty to act this way. And yet, this is the side of David that the chronicler seeks to accent. And he does that to show a different style of leadership. All the people are involved in the activity of devotion and worship. Another way that the chronicler emphasizes this point is that when the ark is brought up to Jerusalem, in Samuel, it's just said that the men participate. In Chroniclers, it's everyone, and men and women are emphasized, so that the chronicler not only has a royal figure who consults, but a royal figure who is inclusive of all the members of the community. It's rather remarkable when you think about it. It's an inclusive view of leadership. And what the chronicler is trying to say is that in the life of devotion, you have an inclusive community. The other thing that the chronicler tends to diminish are the distractions. For example, David's relationship with Michal, Saul's daughter. In Samuel, the sixth chapter, 2 Samuel, the sixth chapter, David comes up in the mind of Michal as someone who is disorderly, who is a little raucous when they bring the ark up to Jerusalem, and so she despises him because of what she defines as moral behavior. In Chronicles, none of that is revealed. Michal's discontent with David is still there, but only because she despised him in her heart. We don't know why, but David, in this account, is fully clothed, acts as any high priestly figure. He has the ephod on, so that worship is defined as an orderly process. David embodies that, and the location of the text is such that at the end of the day, instead of this discontent by Michal, Chronicler has put it ahead of everything so that the whole day moves towards the end, which is a blessing when David comes home. And the conclusion of this account in Chronicles is that David blessed his household. Now, a third part of the Chronicler's account is the transfer of power. One of the key issues in the ancient world was, how do you transfer power when you have multiple wives, multiple claims? In the account in 1 Kings 1 and 2, you have a tumultuous transfer of power. Whereas we know over the length of time that the chronicler is reviewing, that the transfer of power in Judah was resolved, that there were not palace intrigues. There was not great discontent, because a queen mother was named. The first son of the queen mother was the one who was entitled to rule, which is what we know from the text about Solomon. It was Bathsheba who put Solomon on the throne. She was the queen mother. So rather than going through all the discontent, the chronicler underscores the reality of the Davidic monarchy. The reality of the Davidic monarchy was that there was an even transfer of power from one royal king to the next. And we know how important that is in our own country. How we don't have revolts after each transfer of power, even when parties change. So that's what the chronicler underscores. Now, he uses an example from the tradition. The chronicler loves tradition. So he goes back to the transfer of power from Moses to Joshua. And so that many of the images in the transfer of power from David to Solomon come out of that tradition. He's being informed by the tradition. He's using the tradition. He's underscoring a historic fact that in Judah, you have this easy transition from one king to the next. Now, the fourth thing, which is, I think, important for Anabaptist tradition, is that more than any other writer, the chronicler underscores the fact that David did not build the temple because he was a man of violence. There is a passage in Exodus that says, "No sword shall come on any stone in the altar." In other words, you shall not have an act of violence in even shaping the stones of devotion. So very much like Moses, who does all this planning to enter into the promised land, who does all this preliminary planning, David does all the preliminary planning too, and in a way embodies the best understanding of what it means for one generation to relate to the next. One of the things that Eric Erickson says about the role of older adults is that we should generate power for the next generation, not hold it for ourselves. And so the chronicler provides a model for the way in which leadership can care for the next generation. He gathers nails. He gathers wood so that the task of building the temple is simplified. He doesn't do it, but he enables the next generation to do it by providing all the essential materials that are there. So I find the chronicler, in an understanding of leadership, as a model for the way leadership itself should be. That the chronicler is a perfect place to think about leadership. And David now becomes a model for thinking about it. Far from being an idealized version of David, it's a realistic view of how power ought to be expressed.
So instead of straight history, even though it's completely historical, the chronicler is really working at saying, and this is how power should be exchanged, this is how leadership should be exercised.
Yes, he's giving an example of it. I would say he's not distorting the tradition, he's selecting the tradition. Not only that, he has a much larger, he's not only dependent upon 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings. The chronicler is dependent upon a wide array of texts and looking at them to see how they bear upon the very character of leadership. So my view is that he has a very expansive view of what the texts are. And we don't normally think of this when we approach biblical texts, but he's free. He's free to use a wide variety of material to bear on issues of leadership that he feels are important for his generation.
And it sounds like they're important still for our generations.
That's what trapped me into the chronicler. And next time I will talk a little bit about how I got trapped by this writer.
Good. Well, we'll look forward to that next session. Bob, thank you so much for joining us again today, and we'll look forward to the next in the series.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Church of the Brethren webcasts are made possible through the collaborative efforts of all of the Church of the Brethren agencies and are produced by Bethany Theological Seminary. For more information about these webcasts, please visit us on the web at www.cobwebcast.bethanyseminary.edu. Thank you for joining us for the Church of the Brethren webcast series.